Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Kvosvik.
Hey, James. Good to see you again. And Happy New Year. I think this is our first recording in 2021.
Excellent.
And thanks for being such a, worthy adversary in our discussions and bringing so much knowledge and all that good stuff. I should actually say thanks every now and then.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the conversations. I think I take just as much away, or probably more away, from them what I'm given. So,
okay, well, that's good. And I hopefully our listeners are getting a bunch. Well, I know they are, at least the ones that reach out and say, hey, thanks for making it happen. And, you know, and thanks for doing the shows and enjoy your discussions. And now I'm finding that some of the co-hosts have their own following. And so they look at who's the co-host before they decide to listen or not. But it's all good. Hopefully it's all making sense to people and inspiring, or at least causing you to think a little bit. Which brings me to today's topic, James. I got a phone call the other day, and it's rare that I just pick up the phone when I'm not expecting a call, but for happenstance, I picked up, and it was a salesman from a wireless vibration sensor system. And touted how many they're making, a bunch of other stuff. And I says, well, how can I help you? He says, well, I want you to talk about our product on your show. I says, well, you listen to our podcast. That's cool. And he goes, yeah. And I said, we don't do that. You know, we'll talk about vibration sensors in general, but but other than that, nah. We can take advertisers. I should do a plug for ourselves here, James, because we haven't done that in a while. And vibration sensors have been around in a wired sense for years, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah, they've, from what I understand, they've been used like in this, I think the 60s on nuclear submarines, and then evolved from there. So they've been around for a while.
Okay. Wow. I can't imagine how big the sensor was back then. Because I remember them going underneath an inch square. Part of product testing, when I'm doing a smaller product, it's sometimes the size of the accelerometer matters, because it changes the center of balance if it's too big and changes the dynamic. So it's not a big of an issue when you got a 5,000 horsepower electric motor, you know, kind of thing. The vibration sensor can be pretty chunky, but now it's the person that called was representing some company, and I've heard of others out there. I know there's dozens now using this, kind of the Internet of Things is the way. Yep. I think of it, is they say, oh, we're wireless and we do this and that and everything else, which is all great. And I said, wait a second. I mean, just selling a vibration sensor doesn't really help. And I know some companies spend more time training and certifying vibration analysts so they can interpret the results and understand what they're seeing and create trending plot lines and do all kinds of cool stuff with it. But and I know from experience that looking at a vibration pattern, it takes a bit of skill to interpret what in the world that thing is meaning to you. And when you see a change, what could be causing that change? It's, I don't know. Are you a vibration expert? Or I know I've seen these.
I am not a vibration expert. I know enough to know that I don't know anything about it.
Oh, geez. But you've certainly seen this stuff being used in plants and around. And
oh, absolutely. We've seen them used. We've helped define where you may want to put them, but to analyze the waveform and that's not my expertise.
Okay. So that's where you go get somebody that's gone through the training and has got the experience and in it.
But exactly.
To me, the idea of vibration sensor is more what you just said, James. It's when and why would you want to use it? That's really the first question. And then go do it. As opposed to, and I think we've talked about this before, as opposed to open up the catalog or go to a trade show and go, oh, that looks cool, let's try that.
I think that's the problem is, yeah, they look good and the technology sounds good. It sounds great and easy. But do we actually need it? What is it going to help us? And I think that's the thing that people need to think through is, do we actually need vibration here? Yeah, sure, we can collect it, but is it worthwhile?
Well, yeah, I know I've told you about, I was working with a bottling plant and they had one, the bottler itself is this massive piece of equipment and it collected, I don't know, something like 87 different streams of data came off of it. You know, there's a bottle here. It's in the right orientation. It's filled or not filled. The cap is on, it's not on. It's moving at this speed. It's doing this. And then for each of the 48 locations on it. So it just spun off gazillions of terabytes of data a year. And I says, do you guys ever look at this stuff? And goes, no, we're not even sure where it goes. Then, and the, one of the faults, and the reason I asked is that the machine stopped, and I had been seeing a bunch of jams up until that point, and it just stopped. And it says, now what's wrong? It says, oh, one of the sensors is dirty. Oh, well, why are you measuring that? It's like, and it went into that whole discussion. It was like, okay. And that's just one machine out of 15 machines in this line that was spinning off all this data. And I'm like, why? What are you doing with this stuff? And they couldn't answer that.
Well, that's the problem is, you know, you see a sensor, you know, get it set up is cheap, purchasing, it's all cheap. But then no one uses the data. And that's what I think the problem is we got to understand, what are our critical assets? What are the failure modes we're looking for? Does vibration apply? Is it practical? You know, is it all those things? And then set up and monitor those specific things as opposed to, hey, let's just put sensors on everything because we're not going to use it. And that's the challenge I see in a lot of organizations.
Yeah. Now, I remember working in a plant early in my career is that we had the management team would read a book and we'd have this new flavor of the month. We're going to do quality circles. You know, this was before the Internet of Things. Excuse me. But he would say, all right, we're going to have quality circles, and then we're going to do SPC, and then we're going to do continuous improvement, and then we're going to do suggestion boxes, and then we're going to do the big red X, whatever that program was about. But I got to learn lots and lots of different techniques and statistics and all kinds of weird stuff and read a bunch of books. But the shop, the maintenance team and the shop floor would just cross their arms and go, all right, well, this doesn't make any sense. It'll be gone in 6 weeks. I don't have to worry about it.
And that's the thing is oftentimes these sensors are just another one of those flavor of the month things, right? Yeah. So it sounds a lot like I'm beating on these things. No, they are very value added. As long as it's part of your integrated program and you have a plan for them.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I find is organizations don't have a plan for them. They buy a whole bunch. They think it's going to transform everything. Well, it can tell you that something's failing, but if you don't have a plan, a scheduling process and a storeroom process in place, are you going to be able to identify that defect, plan the repair, get the parts, schedule the work and perform that repair before it fails?
Yeah. In the new fancy engineer or technician that can read those sensors, or if you outsource that to somebody else and they send you a cut list basically saying, hey, motor number 87 has got too much vibration, go fix it. Yeah. And it just piles up. It just adds to the backlog.
Yeah. And then it fails before we actually even perform the repair.
Yeah. And if you do have that new engineer that's like trying to do this stuff, but if it doesn't go anywhere, that's frustrating. You know, I'm trying to tell you this needs work, but it just is pushing a rope. That can be a problem. So let's take a look at if I had a magic wand and I'm setting up a motor that's driving some piece of equipment, say a blower, given all of the Internet of Things, WYSIWYG things that I know about, is the first I would design it, make sure it's designed properly and is the right motor and right setup for that application.
Yep. Right?
So start way back in my realm of the world is the design for reliability stuff. Put it in a location such that I can maintain it and make sure that's all set. That's not WYSIWYG or artificial intelligence or anything fancy. That's basics. Right. Then let's say we install it, right? And I know that there's all kinds of cool tools out there nowadays for alignment. laser alignment is, but we didn't have laser alignments in the 60s and 70s. Is that a technology that's actually useful or not useful? Or
it makes it quicker. So back in the day, all we used is dial indicators. So you could use the reverse dial indicator method for it to perform alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Did it require a lot more time and effort and a lot more math on the individual part? Yeah, absolutely it did. But it still worked, and it still worked well. The new technology just makes that process a lot easier.
Okay.
But you still got to understand the fundamentals, right?
Right. And so you get it aligned. Now, I know that alignment goes out over time. It's all kinds of reasons things happen and move and shift and so on. But I don't know of any Internet of Things that are watching the alignment over time.
Well, you can pick that up on vibration.
That's where I was going with this, is that's what then one of the reasons to put a vibration sensor on a piece of equipment is to watch for missing alignment. But the vibration sensor can also look at bearing wear out and defects in the motor and the windings or loss of a wind. I mean, it can find all kinds of cool things.
Yes.
If you know how to look at it.
Absolutely. But going back to what you said, if you design it and you install it right, that's gonna eliminate the vast majority of your problems to begin with.
Yeah.
And then you're just using the sensors, if you choose to do that, to catch the things that, you know, are not influenced by design or install, or if something does happen, an adverse event, and it does push something out of spec.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want to be proactive, you got to start thinking about the design and the install, not just catching a failure quicker.
That's right. You know, that's a good point, is whether it's a vibration or oil analysis or thermal imaging, those are all just ways to see a defect in progress.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of, in, at least in my world, there's a lot of thought going into the design of stuff going, well, we know that this part is a wear out mechanism. This is going to, like a bearing, for example, over time, it's going to wear out. And we want to catch it when it's still useful, yet in the next hour, it won't be. I mean, that's the ideal, is that we, within the response time of us going out and doing a repair or replacement, we want to identify it, get it scheduled, get it worked on moments before it fails critically or becomes inefficient or whatever it is. That's the ideal. And we guard band that all kinds of ways. And some designers and some systems are trying to build that into their equipment. But it's a cost-benefit trade-off. Do I want to pay for all that inbuilt stuff in the design algorithms and everything else, and then put it in an unknown factory that the algorithms don't work, for example? That's part of the risk, is that it's got to be local. So I think the idea of all of these different tools and analysis things that we can do is a way to economically add that back into a system. But it's kind of the horse before the, or the horse behind the cart, whatever that saying is.
Right? Horse before the cart?
No. Yeah, that's what we want, I think, is the horse before the cart. But the idea is that it's understand what any of these tools can do for you, have the capability and wherewithal to actually use it. And I think the telling question that I've seen in my experience in different factories is, how are you using your data now? And if you don't have the capability or discipline to use what you have now and recognize where the limitations are, and that's why you're getting this new stream of data, then it's probably not a good idea.
No, it's got to be part of the full, part of a larger strategy. If you're just relying on those sensors, not going to get you there, right? Yeah. They're an enabler, but they're not. It's not going to get you there on its own.
So have you seen any facilities that actually use this stuff well?
I'm working with a customer right now who is piloting it on a couple different assets. What they did is they chose one or two assets in the utilities area, one or two in their production area, and they're piloting it on those assets. And that way, if it does work, they can scale it out across those other assets. And they chose it based on criticality, also some issues with regulatory. So in the utilities, if they have an outage, then it could lead to fines and certain things. So mm-hmm. they're focusing on what has the biggest impact to the business. But at the same time, they're also heavily working on precision maintenance activities, improving the planning and scheduling process, revising their storeroom stock levels and which parts they have. Mm-hmm. So they're not relying just on that. They're doing that as one part of a larger overall strategy. Okay. So far, they've had good results, but they're doing all these other things. Mm-hmm. And they've been very specific on what assets, where, or what components on those assets they're monitoring with these sensors. So they're one example I have. You know, they're working, it's starting, they're seeing some success, but it's still too early to say, is it a complete success or not?
Well, that brings up the question, and I know you've talked about, you know, focus on your critical assets and the ones that have, if they fail, it has major problems and so on. And it all makes perfect sense. It takes discipline, I imagine, to do that. Yet if, let's say they say, this really works, this, you know, helps us to identify issues weeks before we would otherwise see it, or identifies issues that otherwise would go all the way to failure before we'd identified them. That ramification doesn't go to every piece of equipment in your facility. There's some pieces of equipment, if it fails, nobody would notice for months, you know, kind of thing. It's not a big deal. And why put the investment of tracking it on that piece of equipment?
Yeah, absolutely. If there's no value or it's a low critical item, why put the time and effort to it? Like, just because we can do oil sampling and vibration analysis on gearboxes doesn't mean we should be doing it on those little tiny quarter horse gearboxes that are throwaway for $200.
Mm-hmm. It takes you longer. You know, you get an oil analyst or you get a vibration analyst and you want to keep them busy. So you put sensors in everything. I've seen that happen before. It's like, well, we got the capability. We have the expert. We need to use that skill. And like, well, it's kind of a diminishing return here, guys.
You know, yes, exactly.
Let's get really good at what we really need to do and not worry about the downtime for an hour and let them help train the rest of the facility on what they're doing and how it works. And so we can expand that knowledge rather than having them just do another analysis.
Right. And, you know, you look at some of it, some of the analysis costs you, say, $100. You can buy a new gearbox for $200. Is it worth the effort to run that analysis every 3 months?
Oh, let me do the math here. You're making me work here, James. You're making me work here. All right. Well, I mean, this was sparked from a phone call from apparently a listener. I hope they're listening. But the idea is that, yeah, we got all these cool tools. We got all these cool WYSIWYG things, and they have to fit within the program. I think you said that really well, James. So as you're listening to this, if you've got questions about, you know, these different kinds of technologies and so on, and you want a sounding board other than the marketing team of the different companies, you know, let us know. We'd be happy to chat with you about how and where this stuff fits and are you approaching it correctly. But keep in mind that you still got to be able to deal with the information you're dealing. One, interpret it. Two is it has to fit into your larger scope, as James has outlined. Is that a fair summary, James?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So with that, if you got a question, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and let us know. James and I and the other hosts of the show are also available through our About pages on Ascendo and on LinkedIn. We try not to be hard to find. And as you know, if you've been listening to any or well, I think just about any episode of our show is that we want you to join the conversation. So we look forward to hearing from you. All right. Thanks, James.
Fred, as always, it's been a pleasure.
Talk to you again. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.